Jerry, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. Is this Stan?
This is Stan, and my friend Haney is right over here.
Well, good morning, guys. It's great to chat with you.
It's great to talk to you,
Jerry. It breaks up my rainy day up here in Middle Tennessee. This weather is about to eat me alive, and I want to go fishing.
Oh, what? Here's the deal.
Well, if it's raining, they're biting, Jerry.
If it's raining, they're biting, but the fact
hey,
of the
Hey.
What?
Don't talk to me like I'm not a fisherman. What's the matter with you people? I'm telling you, it's raining up here. Now, I do a lot of things, you know, now, but when it's raining, I don't start fishing. Now, if I'm out there and it starts raining on me, now, that's a different deal.
The thing is, I would love, it would be like a dream come true. Jerry Reed comes down to Fort Myers, Florida. Haney, myself, and you, Jerry, we get ourselves a little flatboat and go out and do some fishing.
You like to fish?
I love to fish.
Well, man, I guess you do. You live in Florida.
You got to be able to fish. But the thing is, I don't own a boat. I always go to friends that have boats. That way I can enjoy it and let them clean it up.
It's much less expensive.
Well, see, now, I was a lot like that. I was always calling Bobby Bear to go fishing, see?
Uh-huh.
And he always put me in the back of the boat. You know, and he always caught the first fish. One day I said, Bear, when do I get to set up front? He says, when you get your own boat. So I went out and I bought me a boat. Now I go fish when I want to go fish.
Oh, that's great.
He just spent about 6 weeks down there with you fellas fishing. I hate him. I hate him. I was just with him for his birthday 3 or 4 days ago, and I threatened his life, you know.
I want to ask you, I mean, you know, it is such a privilege to be talking with you. You got the new album coming out. How is Jerry Reed doing? Are you feeling good? Everything going well for you?
Oh, great. You know, ever since I don't know if you heard this or not, but about 2 years ago, Stan, came over to AP that actor, singer, songwriter Jerry Reed passed away Thursday. Surrounded by his family.
Oh, God.
And the memorial service will be held this Sunday.
Oh, God.
So, when we were looking for a title for this album, I said, hey, I got the title for this album. We're going to call it Jerry Reed Live Still.
It's great. The thing is, I got to ask you this also.
What?
You hear something like that, Jerry Reed passed away, and you're hearing or reading something like that. What's it like to see your own obituary?
Well, you know, my phone just lit up. Both my friends called. And I answered the phone, and I don't know if it was Rufus or who it was, but I answered the phone and said, hello. And he says, my God, you're alive. I said, well, I was this morning when I woke up. What are you talking about? He said, well, I just heard over the radio that you'd passed away. I said, well, somebody forgot to tell me because I'm getting ready to go fishing.
Now, you got to wonder about your friend, though. You hear that someone's died, and your first indication is to give him a call.
Well,
I better call Jerry and see if he's dead.
Well, I come to find out. See, he called because I owed him money, and he thought he never was going to see it again.
Oh, man. Before we talk about the new album, which will be coming out on April 19th and available for everybody live still, Haney and I were talking about this. As a matter of fact, when we knew that you were coming on, even as far as like a week and a half ago, I mean, the Jerry Reed stories between Haney and I, because we're both huge fans, start coming up, and we were talking about it. I want to know if this story is true, that when Elvis was doing Guitar Man in the studio, probably mid to late 60s, was basically doing a version of your song and said, I don't like it. They went down the hallway and grabbed you and brought you in the studio.
No. You got part of it, right?
Okay.
What happened was Guitar Man was a cut on my album, and he heard it riding down Ventura Freeway, so he fell in love with, and he was kind of looking for a signature song.
Right.
You know what I mean, Stan? He just got out of the Army, and he was looking for something to kind of identify with, and so he came to Nashville, and they'd been in there all day, and they was cutting that thing, and he kept saying, I want this to sound like Reed's record. Well, his producer and I, you know, we come from Atlanta. I knew Felton Jarvis for years. And Felton just told him, he said, well, now listen, if you want this to sound like Reed's record, you're going to have to get Reed in here to play on it because he's a finger picker, and these guys ain't finger pickers. They play with them straight picks, and they ain't got a clue what he's doing because Reed's weird. He said, Reed, you know, he claws that thing, and he tunes that guitar up all sorts of ways, and they ain't got a clue about what he's doing. And so I was on the Cumberland River, and I was fishing. And Felton called me, and he said, listen, Reed, we've been in here all dang day long trying to cut this thing. And Elvis said, it don't sound like Reed's records. Will you come in here and pick guitar on it? So I tore out down there, and I walked into that studio. And I sat down and I tuned that guitar up, and I kicked that sucker off. His face lit up, and here we went. Man, I'm telling you something, Stan. You know, Elvis, I'd never seen Elvis in person. You know, I'd seen him like everybody else in movies and pictures and things like that. That was the best-looking man I've laid my eyes on. Made me wonder if I wasn't born wrong. Man, I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm looking over to King singing the guitar, man.
Right.
And I almost clawed my fingernails off on that guitar. And right after we cut that, he cut the U.S. Mail.
Really?
Yeah, well, Pete Drake was a steel guitar player, and he was on the session, and he and I, old pal from Atlanta, and he said, have you got anything else? And I said, listen, Elvis had cut one of my songs. Are you kidding? I'm happy. I'm out of here. He said, no. Elvis said, have you got anything else? And I got to thinking. I said, oh, what would Elvis like here? I mean, I don't know. I said, well, I got one off an album I did called U.S. Mail. And he said, let me hear it. So I went through that sucker, and he said, let's cut it.
Wow.
And before it was over, he done cut four of my songs. Man, I thought, I'm dying gone to heaven. Are you kidding me? Now, Lord, I got, as a matter of fact, a fella from Jack Clement's studio up here in town sent me a tape, I don't know how he got it, of me and Elvis kibitzing back and forth on that session.
Wow.
And this is, what, this is, my Lord, nearly 40 years ago.
Sure.
Of me and Elvis, you know, kidding one another back and forth over the microphone. I wouldn't take $1 million for that, Stan. I tell you,
I bet.
The truth.
You know, Haney was telling me, and because as we were talking, is that, and I remember the album out shortly after Elvis passed away. They put out an album, you know, so many Elvis albums came out after he passed away, but there was one where they, and tell me if this is true, where they lifted Elvis's vocals and you and the band went in there and put the music to it.
Yeah, I tell you what we did. Well, Felton, what Felton wanted to do was Felton wanted to have an album with Elvis doing duets with songwriters, songs he had cut.
Right.
You know, and he wanted, say, for instance, me to sing with Elvis on guitar, man. Well, I think the Colonel X'd that, or RCA, or the publishing company X'd all that for some reason. So what he did is he just went in and recut my song, Guitar Man. We took everything off but the drums and Elvis.
Right.
And replaced everything else, and I put down the electric guitar for that, and that's the version we do on the album.
And that's probably one of my, that's definitely my favorite version of the song and one of my favorite things of yours that you've ever done. That's just, I mean, that song just rocks from beginning to end.
Well, you know, it just sort of fell right into Elvis's breadbasket. Matter of fact, you know, any old boy from the South that plays guitar is going to relate to that. And you know, it seems like everybody on earth picks a guitar. Some way or another, they can chord that sucker, or, you know, or they sit around the house and sing and pick. That's what's so beautiful about the guitar, is it's the easiest instrument in the world to chord. It's the hardest instrument in the world to master. You know, I don't know anybody that's ever mastered. The fella that came closest to it was Chet.
I got to ask you about you. I mean, your relationship with the Chet Atkins. My grandfather, who back in the 30s and 40s played in a country western band. He played the steel guitar in the band. And growing up, when I was a little kid, and I would see his 78 records, and he told me, he said, grandson, he said, this is the man, Chet Atkins, and I know you had a great relationship with that man.
Well, let me tell you something, fellas. In the rest of all of your life, there's never going to be anybody on guitar like Chet Atkins. Chet defined modern guitar. I mean, you know, he told me the story how he learned to play like he did. He built a crystal radio. He lived up in Luttrell, Tennessee, and he could pick up WCKY, and Merle Travis was on the on the radio show, and he heard Merle pick, and he just sat around and figured out how he did it and came up with his own style. And I'm going to tell you something. There's never been anybody. He defines guitar. I mean, he could play jazz. He could play classic.
Yes, he could.
He could play country. He could play anything and pick with anybody. I saw him with George Benson and Earl Cleugh, and I thought, oh, my Lord, man, what's Chet going to do with these guys? Well, he just happened to steal the show. He sat there and played Stars and Stripes Forever and played all the parts, and my face fell off.
I know he did a lot of work in his later years with Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits, too.
Yeah. Well,
and it was tremendous.
It don't make a difference who it is. George Benson, he courted with George, Les Paul. That was, you know what Chet was? Chet was a creative visionary, and I don't know how he did it, but, to play a guitar, guys, now listen, I've played guitar for over 60 years, and playing a guitar for a living, seriously, is an everyday business. And yet here he comes, he keeps his recording career going while he runs the division of RCA in Nashville, Tennessee, making stars out of all these people.
Right.
And I'm thinking, how in the world can that man do that? It just beat anything I've ever seen. I said, he must have two souls in him or something, or somebody's plugged him in. He's that ever-ready battery. I don't know how he does it. There's so many people that have got Chet Atkins to thank for their career.
But you know what, Jerry, the thing is Chet Atkins, I mean, you're a contemporary of his, and the thing is, you're giving compliments to so many people, but the thing is, they have classes in universities on trying to pick and finger a guitar like you play it.
Reading. That's nonsense.
Not nonsense. I read something somewhere else that they don't understand with you writing a song. Do you write a song because of the way you play guitar and the way that you do it, or do you just do it and play it that way? They say that you yourself rank you right up there with everybody. Nobody does better picking than you do.
Well, in life, let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. God sends you here with the package. And if you're lucky enough, he'll give you the biggest gift you could ever have in this lifetime. And that's desire, okay? Picking is one thing. And people say, man, you that song is great, and you're just great, and all that. But he comes here with you just like a gift under a Christmas tree. Boys, I couldn't have done anything else. And things have fell into place in my life at critical times that kept me in this business, that makes me know that the good Lord is in control of everything. He's allowed me to have this much success in my life in spite of myself, because I'm going to tell you, I've done everything in the world to screw it up. I really have. I've run into walls. I've run off the road. I've had wrecks, and I've done this, and I've screwed up there. And he'll grab me by the nape of the neck and put me back on the road because my desire was there. And I'll tell you how I came up with my style. You know Ray Stevens.
Absolutely.
Well, Ray Stevens and me and Joe South were all teenagers in Atlanta working for Bill Lowry. See, and when I was in the United States Army, me and Ray had a band, right? And Ray would book these sock hops and these bar mitzvahs and things, and I was starving to death in the Army, so I'd go out and play with him. Breaking every rule the United States Army had. I wasn't supposed to mess with civilians and compete against them, but I didn't care. I was hungry.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Ray did a song on every show by Ray Charles called Hallelujah, I Just Love Her So. Well, that piano intro just killed me. It just knocked me out. It was, you know, it was counterpoint melody. The bass string was playing one line, and I say the bass strings, the bass notes and the top notes were going against it. And I said, man, I could do that on guitar. I want to learn to do that. And that got me to thinking that way. And the first thing you know, I'm writing instrumentals that way. And I sent Chet, oh, I think 1960, a tune called Down Home. Well, it just blew Chet's mind. I didn't know it till I moved up here and we were chatting. But he wrote me this letter and told me he was going to record it. Well, that just blew the top of my head off. You mean Chet Atkins going to cut my song? Okay, where can I go? Where's the bathroom? I got to get out of here. And then that caused me to write another one called Scarecrow. And then lo and behold, he cut that. So when I came to Nashville, you know, I had an entree. I had a card. I'd already met Chet in Atlanta. And so when I cut out of the Army and went to Nashville, he's the first guy I went to see. And I'm going to tell you something, to put a point on all this. If there hadn't been a Chet Atkins in my life, I wouldn't be talking to you boys right now. Because I'd been on Capitol Records. I was on Capitol Records as a junior in high school. They signed me when I was 17 and recorded me when I was 18. And I spent 4 years floundering around my records selling like hotcakes, about 50 cents a stack. You know, I mean, you couldn't give my records away. And then when I got out of the Army, I was on Columbia. And the same thing was happening. And by then, I'd moved to Nashville, and I was playing guitar on recording sessions, you know. And Chet told me one day, and I'd been hanging out with Chet an awful lot and going over to his house and picking and singing. And he said, Reed, I'm going to tell you something. You need to come over here and let me record you because them people recording you don't know what they're doing. They're doing it wrong. He said, what you need to do is you need to sit down with that guitar and sing these songs you sing over the house and play that guitar the way you play it. And we'll put out a record about every 3 months, and I'll bet you we'll stir things up. And boy, was he right.
Yeah. Oh,
first
session, without a doubt.
I tell you, Stan, the very first session, you knew it. All the musicians knew it. Man, I'm telling you, it just started happening.
Wow.
And, man, it just lit me up like a cherry bomb. I'm telling you what, I just went off. I started writing everything I could think of, picking everything I could think of, and
Jerry, I got to ask you also, because I still want to talk about the new album coming out before we let you go, but I also want to ask, we'd be remiss in not asking about those days, especially in the mid-70s with the Bandit films and working with Hal Needham and Burt Reynolds and Jackie Gleason. How much fun was that? Was it as much fun as we saw on the screen in those outtakes at the end of the film?
Are you kidding me? Listen, let me tell you something. When we were doing Smokey the Bandit, Bert had his own crew, everybody he liked, everybody on the crew he knew and he handpicked, and it was not even like making a movie. It was just like a big old party. And all we were doing is running up them interstates and them highways around Georgia, wrecking trucks and cars and throwing babies up there. I'm telling you, that movie was a hoot. And I remember I was fishing. I'd finished my shoot, and Needham coming up to me, and he said, Reed, I need a song. I said, okay, that's what I do for a living. What do you need? He said, I need a song about leaving Atlanta, going to Texarkana, and bringing back an illegal load of Coors beer. You know, it's illegal across Mississippi on the east. I said, well, I didn't know that. He said, yeah. So on the way home, I wrote the chorus, and I heard the music just fell into place. And I wrote the chorus, and I got to Nashville. Well, I had a writer who was writing for my publishing company named Dick Feller. So I got him in. I sung him that chorus, and I said, now, here's the script. I said, I want you to go and write me two verses about hauling it down to Texarkana, picking up that beer and getting back to Atlanta. And here, he went and read the script. He wasn't gone, I don't guess he's gone 3-4 hours. And he came back with those two verses, and I went and made a demo of it, and I took it back the next time I was scheduled to shoot. down to Atlanta and played the demo for him, and, well, he just went through the roof. He said, man, I want this. I said, well, you can't put that out. That's a demo, you know.
Right.
I said, I got to go in the studio and cut that thing. And I'm going to tell you something. That movie and that song, I guess, defines my life. I don't know, my career. They're still playing that movie today.
Oh, they are.
Every time I sing Eastbound and Down, you think I'm singing the national anthem. It beats anything I've ever seen. It really does.
I don't, but I, you know what? I don't.
And you can't forget Texas Bound and Flying either.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we had to have one for number two. So I just picked it up where I left off.
They will still show on television, and this is the one, you know, not too many people remember this. There was a Smokey and the Bandit 3 where you yourself were the bandit for a while, and you and Jackie Gleason made that movie.
I wish you hadn't have brought that up.
But you know what? The simple thing is, it still had the same flavor of it, and to get Jackie Gleason's lines.
But a lot of that was done around Ocala, wasn't it, Jerry?
You know how I did that movie. You want me to tell you how I did that movie?
All right.
I was doing the Survivors with Robin Williams and Walter Matthau. and we were still in New York. We were heading to Vermont to shoot it. And they called me, and Bert wasn't going to do it. All he was going to do was show up at the end of the movie.
Right.
And they didn't have a movie. They didn't have a movie. And they said, will you come down here and we won't need you but about 3 days. And the worst mistake I ever made in my life, Stan, I said, oh, okay. Well, I went down there, and for 3 days, they
yes.
worked me from first light to last light. I was in every scene.
Yeah.
At the end of the third day, I couldn't talk. I was hoarse. I'd ruined my throat and everything
else.
Oh,
man.
And then I saw the movie, and I said, man, don't put that out. Please don't put that out.
Now, another one you did that was great was Hot Stuff. That was a great movie.
Wasn't that a great movie? Man, I'm going to tell you, Dom DeLuise beats anything I have ever seen in my life, man. And he's a great director. You know, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's been on this show before. He's a great guy.
Oh, he's fabulous. There ain't nothing on the planet like him. Nothing like Dom DeLuise. I loved him. I've loved him all my life, man. I'm telling you, this guy is just... And, of course, Suzanne Pleshette, man, she was one of the guys.
Yep.
She's liable to wind up playing talk with the Teamsters, you know what I mean? And you know, that barracks talk, that don't bother her any.
Well, she's around with that Tom Poston now, you can tell.
Oh, yeah, she's one of the guys. You can tell she's a journey woman.
All right, but you know what? I cannot believe how fast time flies. We've been on with you for almost a half hour here. I want to talk about the new album. It's coming out April 19th, mm-hmm. Live Still. Now, you decided to put out this album. It's a live album. We played a little earlier, Father Time and Gravity. Great song.
Well, it's about you, you know.
Yeah, of course it is.
How old are you, Stan?
I'm 43.
Well, see, you qualify.
Yes, I do.
Yes, now.
And Haney is a baby. He's just 39.
Well, no. Once you hit 30, you qualify. Now, all of my fun songs have fell out of the sky. I'll just tell you that right now. And when I said Father Time and Gravity, I thought, man, because I'd been looking at all my friends, you know, and I saw
right.
where their chest had fallen around their belt buckle, you know, and their earlobes were sagging. And I said, man, I've got to write this. Besides, there's enough war and killing and
sure.
rapage and pillage, enough going on. We need to laugh, son. Somebody needs to giggle around here. And I bet you that song wrote itself in 15 minutes. Of course, you know, by the time I recorded it, I'd been sitting on it a couple of years. And I finally decided, I said, well, I'm going to tell you how this album got made now, because this album was a surprise just between me and you and the guys. I called Chet Hinesley, and I said, I want you to come out on the road with me. I want to record this song, and it's got to be recorded in front of a live audience, because it's comedy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's fun, and people got to laugh. And he said, okay. So he brought all his little toys and bells and whistles out on the road, and I was laying for that song. Well, lo and behold, he recorded the whole show. Well, we got back, and I got to listening to that thing, and I said, man, listen to the band and me and the crowd. I said, man, that's one of those moments.
It's everything was clicking.
Yeah, I said, man, listen to the feeling on all those tracks. I said, man, we're just making an album out of this thing. And that's how the album came to be. But Father Time and Gravity, it was written for the human race, so we can laugh at one another.
Right.
That's the whole thing.
Anybody over 30, Jerry, right?
Huh?
Anybody over 30, they fall into that.
Yeah, and anybody under 30, it's previews of coming attractions.
Jerry, I want to tell you, it's been just such a great pleasure talking to you. And
your heart.
It's almost like one of these things that if we were able to just hang out one day, go do some fishing, the three of us, we'd have ourselves a good time.
Well, you're not kidding. And I want to thank you for all this time. I've enjoyed chatting with you guys. And I have a certain amount of hate for you because of where you live. And, I've been down there many times you get on the golf course when we're up here shivering. And
I'll probably play sometime this week.
So I want you to know I have a certain amount of love, but a certain amount of hate, for that geographical area and the people who live in it. You know, it's not a personal thing now. It's
right,
not a personal
I understand.
Thing. You know what I mean? But just keep that in mind, and thanks for having me. I've enjoyed chatting with you. God bless you, and I'll see you later down the road somewhere.
All right, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.